Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 6.
Okay, so let's dive in. Can you even imagine a rebellion that shakes heaven itself, so much so that the celestial armies actually need to call for outside help?
It's pretty wild when you think about it.
Right, that's exactly the scenario we're exploring today. This incredible picture of the clash between Sun Wukong, you know, the self-proclaimed great sage equaling heaven, and, well, all the forces heaven could muster.
And it's the sheer audacity of it all that really jumps out. Here's this being literally born from a rock,
yeah,
who manages to just completely turn the heavenly order upside down. It forces this massive, almost unprecedented response.
Exactly. And the immediate spark, the thing that really kicks it all off, is the King Mother's Peach Banquet getting completely wrecked.
Total chaos.
But like you said, it wasn't just that one event, was it? The sources show it was really the climax of, well, a lot of things building up.
Absolutely. It had been simmering for a while.
So our mission here is to really trace those key moments, understand how the conflict escalated, and figure out why on earth capturing this one monkey proved so incredibly difficult for the entire heavenly army. What were the roots of it all?
That's the key question, isn't it? It's definitely more than just one ruined party. There's a whole backstory here that kind of sets the stage for this level of celestial warfare.
For sure. The banquet's the trigger, yeah. But let's rewind. Sun Wukong's origins are just amazing. Born from a stone, flower fruit mountain, eastern continent of divine lands.
And the detail about his eyes shooting golden light. Right at birth.
Yeah.
Up to the Dipper constellation.
Yeah. I mean, talk about an entrance that screams not your average monkey right from the start.
Definitely. And his early life backs that up. He quickly becomes this powerful spirit, tames dragons and tigers, even marches down to the underworld and wipes his name off the list of the dead.
Which is just, wow. That's not just power. That's defiance of the natural order, isn't it?
It really is. So heaven notices this powerful, unpredictable being. And their first move...
Not crackdown, surprisingly. They try to bring him into the fold, offer him a job.
Yeah, but what a job.
Yeah.
Head keeper of the heavenly stables.
Seriously, he felt totally slighted, storms off back to Flower Fruit Mountain.
And declares himself great sage equaling heaven. Kidian De Sheng.
Talk about throwing down the gauntlet. The ego, the sheer nerve to claim equality with heaven itself.
So heaven's next move is interesting. They actually grant him the title.
They do, but it's empty, right?
Totally empty. No salary, no actual responsibilities, no power, just the name. It feels like they're trying to appease him, maybe hope he just settles down without actually giving him anything real.
Leaving this incredibly powerful, ambitious being with a grand title and nothing to do.
Exactly. And, predictably, more trouble follows. He gets put in charge of the peach orchard.
Oh, boy. The peaches of immortality.
The very same. And Sun Wukong, well... Restraint isn't exactly his strong suit.
So he helps himself?
He helps himself. Eats the best ones, the ones that grant the longest life. Big celestial no-no.
Okay, so that's strike two. But the real breaking point, the thing that leads to the all-out war, is the banquet itself.
Right, the King Mother's famous peach banquet. And because he holds this, you know, honorary title, but has no actual rank.
He doesn't get an invite.
Bingo. And for someone calling himself equal to heaven, that's the ultimate snub.
So his reaction is... Well, it's pretty spectacular, isn't it?
Memorable is one word for it. He doesn't just crash the party. He sneaks in, disguised as the barefoot immortal, gorges himself on the food, the wine.
And then goes even further. Raids Lao Tzu's private stores for immortality elixir.
And steals the Jade Emperor's special wine. Then takes it all back to Flower Fruit Mountain to share with his monkeys.
It's just complete chaos and defiance. Understandably, this is the absolute last straw for the Jade Emperor.
Patience gone.
Totally gone. He finally unleashes the army, 100,000 heavenly soldiers, and they bring out the big guns, this inescapable net. They are not messing around anymore.
That scale of deployment tells you everything. This isn't just mischief anymore in their eyes. It's a full-blown threat to heavenly authority.
But even with this overwhelming force, netting the Monkey King turns out to be way harder than they thought. We see Guanyin Bodhisattva getting involved.
Which is significant.
Yeah.
She sees the ruined banquet, realizes something major is up. Her involvement really signals how serious this has become.
Definitely. And she sends her own disciple, Huyen Walker, who's also Mucha, Li Jing's son, right?
That's him.
Yeah.
Sends him down to Flower Fruit Mountain to, well, basically see what's going on and maybe help out the heavenly forces.
So Huyen gets there, talks to the commanders, Li Jing included, and the initial report is not good for heaven.
Not good at all. Li Jing basically says, yeah, we sent the nine planets to challenge him first.
The nine planets, pretty heavy hitters.
You'd think. But Sun Wukong just swatted them aside with his magic, defeated, just like that.
Wow. Okay, so that's a major setback right out of the gate.
It really establishes him as a powerhouse. Then comes the main event, 100,000 soldiers versus one Monkey King.
The battle rages all day until nightfall. And the result?
Sun Wukong pulls off this amazing clone trick, slips away completely. The Heavenly Army, they manage to capture a bunch of wild animals.
Oh, the indignity. Imagine reporting that back. Sir, we fought bravely and apprehended several panicked deer.
It sounds almost comical, but it shows his skill, doesn't it? Power, magic, and cunning. He's not just strong, he's smart. And then he has the nerve to stand outside their camp and taunt them.
Adding insult to injury. So at this point, Huion may be wanting to impress or maybe just seeing the need.
Probably a bit of both. He decides to take Sun Wukong on himself, even though his father, Li Jing, warns him.
And the sources describe a pretty intense fight, right? 50 or 60 rounds. Huion with his iron cudgel, Sun Wukong with his legendary Ribang.
Yeah, it's depicted as a serious clash. Huion is clearly skilled, holds his own for a while. It wasn't a walkover.
But ultimately.
Ultimately, Sun Wukong's sheer power, maybe his stamina, maybe just that extra bit of magic, wins out. Huion has to retreat, completely exhausted.
And that defeat really rattles Li Jing. He realizes they need even more firepower.
Definitely. This prompts the decision to send Huion and the Great Strength Demon King back up to the Jade Emperor to formally request reinforcements. They need someone exceptional.
Huion also gives a full report to Guan Yin, laying out just how tough this monkey is. It's clear the standard army isn't cutting it.
The fact they have to go back, cap in hand, asking for more help, really underlines the scale of the problem. They underestimated him badly.
The Jade Emperor, hearing this, is apparently pretty incredulous at first. Like, how can one monkey defy my entire army?
You can almost understand it. But Guan Yin steps in with a crucial recommendation.
Yes. This is a turning point. She suggests bringing in Erlang Shen.
The Jade Emperor's own nephew, stationed down at the Guanjing Estuary.
And Erlang Shen isn't just anybody. The sources hype him up quite a bit. Already famous for beating six other powerful monsters.
And he commands his own elite force, right? The Meijian brothers, those 1,200 grass-headed deities. It sounds like a serious private army.
It does. And there's that interesting detail about his independence. He takes orders, but not formal imperial decrees.
Yeah, it suggests he's got his own authority, operates a bit outside the usual channels, which makes the emperor having to specifically ask for his help even more significant.
And Erlang Shen's reaction.
He's apparently thrilled, eager for the challenge. Immediately musters his forces, the Meishen brothers, Kang, Zhang, Yao, Li, Guo Shen, Zijin, plus his hunting hounds, eagles, the whole setup. He's ready to go.
His arrival is pretty dramatic, too. He just bypasses the heavenly nets altogether.
Doesn't even bother. Walks right up to Li Jing and basically says, take down those nets, let him out. I'll fight him.
Bold strategy. He wants a direct fight, a battle of transformations, skill against skill.
Exactly. He's confident. Tells Li Jing, you know, my brothers will help if I'm losing, and they'll handle the capture if I win. Just keep the perimeter secure.
And he makes one crucial request of Li Jing, doesn't he?
Yes. Use the demon-revealing mirror. Keep it trained on Sun Wukong so he can't just, poof, disappear or transform and escape. Erlang wants this fight contained.
Smart. Preventing escape is key with someone like Wukong.
Absolutely. So the stage is set for this epic duel.
And it starts with some trash talk, right?
Who are you, young general, daring to boldly come here to provoke me?
And Erlang Shen's reaction. I am the nephew of the Jade Emperor, bestowed with the title of Erlang, the Manifesting Sage King. He's basically saying, do you know who I am?
Great sage. That brings up family dirt. Says, remember when the Jade Emperor's sister descended to the mortal realm? Mary Jiang Jun, giving birth to you. Was it you who once used an axe to split Peach Mountain? Says, and demanding the four heavenly kings.
Yeah.
That's like saying, get your bosses.
And Erlang Shen's reaction. Impudent monkey, take my blade. Highlighting the contrast, the righteous nephew versus the rebel king.
A bit of posturing, yeah. Then they clash. Weapons, martial arts, intense combat.
But it quickly goes beyond just physical fighting.
Oh, yeah. It escalates into this incredible display of magic. Mm-hmm. Erlang Shen transforms, grows into this immense giant figure, swinging his three-pointed lance.
And Sun Wukong matches him, grows just as big, his Rui Bang becoming this colossal pillar sweeping across the battlefield.
Imagine seeing that. The heavenly soldiers, the monkey demons, everyone just watching in awe.
But Erling is thinking tactically even while he's this giant warrior. He orders his own troops, the Mation Brothers and the Grass-Headed Deity,
to attack Flowerfruit Mountain itself while Sun Wukong is distracted.
Brilliant move. Hit him where he lives, threaten his monkey followers. It totally throws Sun Wukong off his game.
It does. It forces Wukong to shrink down and try to retreat, protect his home base.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the chase really begins.
The transformations. This part is amazing. Sun Wukong turns into a sparrow.
Erling becomes a sparrowhawk.
Wukong becomes a cormorant.
Erlang, a sea crane.
Fish.
Snake.
A kite. It's this frantic, magical game of cat and mouse across the landscape.
Until Sun Wukong tries one last, really clever transformation. He becomes a small roadside temple.
Almost perfect.
Yeah.
Except for one tiny detail.
The tail. He couldn't hide his tail, so he transforms it into a flagpole sticking out behind the temple.
Hilarious. And Erlang spots it immediately, doesn't he? Calls him out on it.
He does. Laughs and gets ready to smash the temple.
Mm.
Sun Wukong has to quickly transform again and escape.
But Erlang Shen is relentless. The pursuit continues. And Li Jing is still up there with the demon-revealing mirror.
Right, tracking his every move. Li Jing reports that Wukong's used an invisibility spell and is heading straight for Erlang's own territory, Guanjiang Estuary.
The nerve. And he arrives at a temple.
The temple itself. It sounds busy. There are mentions of recording requests. Childbirth, illness.
Yeah, Biofu, Zhao Jing asking for children, Keen dealing with sickness. It feels like a, you know, a living place where people bring their concerns. Trying to hide in plain sight at his pursuer's home base.
Sun Wukong is to impersonate Erlang Shen.
That doesn't last long, though.
No, the fight erupts again right there and then spills back towards Flowerfruit Mountain.
And all this time, watching from the Southern Heaven Gate.
Are the Jade Emperor, Guan Yin, Lao Tzu, all the top deities. This is the main event now. Everyone's invested.
Guan Yin even offers to step in, right? Use her willow branch or cleansing vase.
She does. But Lao Tzu advises against it, says the vase might break against Wukong's iron staff. And then Lao Tzu decides to take matters into his own hands.
This is the moment. The decisive intervention.
From way up in the heavens, Lao Tzu takes his diamond bracelet.
His diamond bracelet, yeah. Not exactly standard weaponry.
Not at all. And he just drops it. Down it falls, hitting Sun Wukong square on the head.
Bam. An attack from completely out of nowhere.
Totally inexpected, and it works. The blow stuns Sun Wukong, makes him stumble.
And in that moment of weakness,
Erlang Shen's Celestial Hound leaps in, bites Wukong's leg, tripping him up completely.
That's it. He's down. Erlang Shen and the Mation brothers finally pile on and capture him.
They bind him tight with ropes, and then they pierce his piapagnus, his collarbones, with hooks.
Ow! Why there specifically?
It's believed that piercing those bones prevents shape-shifting and other magical transformations. They're making absolutely sure he can't escape this time.
So he's finally, truly captured.
Finally. Lao Tzu calmly retrieves his diamond bracelet from the battlefield. The heavenly armies erupt in celebration. Erlang Shen has done it.
Though Erlang is pretty humble about it, gives credit to the emperor and the gods.
He does. His brothers want to take Wukong straight up to heaven for judgment.
But Erlang sends them to secure Flowerfruit Mountain first, make sure everything's under control, before heading back to his own place to await rewards. He seems quite methodical.
Very strategic, even after the victory. Then the main heavenly army escorts the captured Sun Wukong back to the Brightness Hall in heaven.
A triumphant return, and the Jade Emperor's final order.
Execution. Take him to the demon execution platform. Dismemberment.
So that wraps up this part of the story. We've gone from that chaotic banquet all the way through this incredible resistance.
To Sun Wukong's eventual capture, which, let's face it, needed Erlang Shen's specialized skill and a surprise attack from Lao Tzu himself.
It really is amazing how much trouble one incredibly determined being caused. The entire might of heaven strained to capture him. It shows the regular forces just weren't enough.
Definitely needed that special intervention. And the use of Lao Tzu's bracelet is such an unexpected twist.
So hopefully everyone listening now has a really solid grasp of this whole epic conflict. From zero to anti-hero.
Yeah.
And then capture.
A pretty thorough understanding, yeah. Covering all the key stages of his rebellion and capture. And of course the big question hanging there. Facing execution, what actually happens next to Sun Wukong?